Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. You know, sequels very rarely live up to expectations, are as good as the first film, if not better than its predecessor. And we are going to find out today if Infernal Affairs 2 stands up to the measuring stick. Well, I'm going to say off the bat, I think so, in a very different way. You see, while this film is a sequel, for all intents and purposes, to Infernal Affairs, it acts as more of a prequel. It's set in the 7 years before the events of the first film, and the two leads from the original movie, the guys playing both sides, are played by the younger counterparts from the original film, Sean Yu and Edison Chen. Sean Yu is playing Chan Wing Yun, who was the cop undercover in the Triads. Officer Lao Ken Ming is played by Edison Chen, who, you know, was the Triad member undercover in the Hong Kong police. And, you know, they start off with a quote. I don't know where the quote came from, because they don't specify, but, you know, it talks about intern, like, continuous suffering, again, kind of giving that motif and how time is just so continuous hell for the people involved. And, you know, we see a lot of different sides of a lot of characters in this film, I'll say, especially Superintendent Wong, who's just a detective in this film. In the opening, he's very, you know, jaded. He's talking about his first year in the force in 1980 and how he saw his partner gunned down after, like, they got called to a big fight with the Triads. And before he could even unholster his weapon, his partner gets shot. And the guy got a couple of years in prison, but he saw him 2 years ago. And this was in 1988, as they're having this conversation. He saw him 2 years ago, and he's living it up, you know, in some swanky club with, Quinn's goons, because he's a Triad member. And Wong gives this absolutely tremendous quote, one of my favorite lines in the whole film. Those who kill get golden belts, while those who fix roads perish with the mangled corpses. Now that is one hell of a line, and that just speaks to the mind frame that Wong is in. He's very jaded by the system and how life works, and he feels like it shouldn't be that way, and how Nai Quan is a very dangerous and evil man who needs to be rid of, and how, you know, Wong would feel a lot better if Sam was in charge. But Sam, and Han Sam is the big bad in the first film, is not about that in this one. He's just like, nah, man, he's my boss. I'm kind of happy where I'm at. I got to play it low key. Like, I don't want to take a swing at the king, man. Like, we can get him another way, surely, right? And, you know, he doesn't want to go along with the plan of killing him. Well, in any event, the man Quan gets killed eventually, and Les leaves a power vacuum within the underworld. The four big bosses, Hua, Ching, Gandhi, and I'm going to assume it's Negro. We're going to go with that because, you know, I don't know if, you know, I probably should have looked up that one for pronunciation later, but he doesn't play a whole big factor in this film necessarily, so like I didn't think to look it up. But in any event, Quan's son, played by Francis yes, I know I sounded weird saying but it's spelled NG, and that's the is the pronunciation in Cantonese, and I forgot the other language, but it's Chinese for that, you know. English speakers say ing. And, you know, some go with it, but that's a little fun fact for you. But anyway, Francis plays Nai Wing Hao. He's the son, one of the children of Quan, and he more or less takes over the family business. He's the Michael Corleone in this film. You know, they talk about how he runs a legitimate business. His other kids are, you know, civilians, but he's the one that's kind of seemed like he'd be the one to take over, and obviously he does, and he uses the treachery and betrayal amongst the four big bosses in order to get them back in line and to continue paying tribute to the Nai family, and he becomes in charge. And we find out that Yan, the reason he's kicked out of, you know, cadet school is because he lied about his family lineage. He goes by his mother's name. However, his father was Quan, making him the half-brother of Wing Hao, and that ain't gonna fly for the police. However, Wong says, hey, you still want to be a cop? I think I can make that happen. You just gotta answer me this one question. Why do you want to do it? And staying true to his character that we see in the original film, he's like, I want to be a righteous man, which is good enough for Wong to send him undercover. That's a fun little wrinkle, you know. And in my initial review, our comparison of Infernal Affairs and The Departed, I mentioned that the Leonardo DiCaprio character had a family in crime except for his father, and you know, this more or less falls in line with that. You know, that's pretty cool. And it's interesting to see how in this form he's got to go against his own family, his own brother, so to speak, in order to take him down. And that could lead to a lot of turmoil. And, you know, he wants to prove that, hey, he is a cop just like everybody else, and that it will make no difference to him. But, you know, the other interesting aspect of this movie is Han Sam's relationship with his wife, Mary, and how they have a very loving relationship, and he's got a way softer side to him. He's more jovial. He doesn't like to get his hands too dirty. You know, he works with the triads, but he's not about a whole lot of vicious violence and all that. And his wife, however, is willing to step on a few toes if she has to, whatever gets the job done, because she feels that as long as her husband treats her well, that she will do right by him and do anything possible to make him better and him happy. And that's, you know, her actions pretty much are the deciding fate for a lot of the men in this film. And that's pretty crazy to think how she's the catalyst for everything from this movie and well into the original film and the timeline of that, like how it's that course of like 10 to 11 years. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, Ming, played by Edison Chin, you know, he's got a soft spot for Mary. He will do whatever Mary tells him to do. He, you know, she says jump, he will say how high. So it's pretty interesting how much of, you know, a lapdog or a simp, if you will, he is for Mary in this film. You know, it's like more or less, yeah, he works for Sam, but it seems like he's got more of a loyalty to her no matter what. And, you know, if she is in peril, he will be there for her when Sam's not around. So that was a pretty cool, interesting dynamic for him in this film, because, you know, the main character has played by Andrew Lau in the first film. His role is not, I don't want to say diminished, but it's scaled back as opposed to Wong and maybe even Yan. I mean, Yan's there, but like it focuses more on his brother, Wing Hao, and Wong, and like the changes that they go through in this film, especially Wong, because he's got a superintendent, Luke, played by Jun Ho. I think it's Hugh. It might be Hugh. It's H-U. Probably, yeah, who. We'll go with that. Sounds about right. I apologize to any Chinese out there that may be listening to the podcast. My Chinese ain't very good, and I suck at pronunciations. I suck at even other European names. But anyway, regardless, their relationship is very cool. It's a brother bond, and they always play this card game. Whoever comes out with the highest card gets the lead, you know, at that point, whatever their assignment is. And Luke kind of lets Law do his own thing in a sense, but they counterbalance each other with how Wong is very jaded and discontent, and Luke is very by the book and will do what is needed, you know, as governed by, you know, the police and all that. Another interesting aspect in this film that kind of plays into the first film a lot and the duality is the fact that in the time of this story, China is under Europe occupation. Like, Europe pretty much has control over China, in a sense, or Britain. Britain has control over China, and that's, you know, true to life up until about 97, I think, when they transferred power back over to China, and like it became the Republic of China, you know, that aspect. So that's pretty cool in that, how, like, you know, they got to answer to like their higher ups in Europe and like Britain. And like when Wong plays fast and loose with the rules, Luke's got to answer to his higher ups from the other side of the, from across, I can't even, I don't think it's, no, it's not even across the pond technically, but you know, they're higher ups there. And he's like, at one point, it's like, yeah, you know what? Even the Brits are on board with what you got to do. Because it gets pretty fast and loose with Wong at certain points in this film. And I do like the sequel a lot because, yeah, it gives us backstory on those characters, but it enriches the whole thing. Like, again, the unique relationship with Sam and Wong in this film and how they're pretty much friendly. And you see the change in Sam. And I will say, possibly, maybe it's with a bit of reluctance, in a sense, that he goes along with the change that he's almost forced into. And I thought that was really fascinating. Gives another depth to his character that we didn't really get in the first film. Because, you know, in the first film, he's an out-and-out paranoid, you know, killmonger. Like, anybody who's in his way, he's going to eliminate him no matter what. And this one, he shows a consciousness and he has to deal with the ramifications of other people's actions that affect his life tremendously. And how is he going to get his way out of this? Like, at a certain point, he's even supposed to take part in the trial of Wing Hao. And he's going to be a star witness for the prosecution. And it's like, man, he's got a tough call to make at that point. I also enjoy how they brought back the Lost Time song sung by Sai Chin that played in the first film. You know, if you remember in the record store, that song plays. It's recurring in that movie. And we get the reason why it's such a big part of Ming's life and why it's one of his favorite songs. It's because it's Mary's favorite song in this film, and she's the one who kind of puts him on to having a interest and love into music. And so I thought that was a unique spin or a unique enrichment to his backstory. And the twists and turns in this one, like the other one was more methodical, like who kind of cat and mouse game of like paranoia of not trying to get caught by either side, and like they're trying to like be one step ahead of the other and trying to figure out who's who. This one is a more straight up crime noir, but I mean there's a lot of seedy, you know, backstabbing and undercutting one another to try to get ahead, and a lot of fun surprises, like I said, especially with Sam and Wing Hao, how they come at a crossroads towards the end of the film. That is just beautiful. Even I didn't see that one coming, because I did, like, you know, it was intriguing for me because I definitely wanted to see, because when I realized this was going to be a prequel and more of an origin story, if you will, I wanted to see how each character would fall into line with what we saw in the first film, Infernal Affairs. And I was, you know, again, I was surprised by Sam's demeanor and personality in this one. And Francis it's Ingy, but people, Americans or English speakers say it ing, which it's not correct. It's but Wing Hao, again, I think I've already explained that, but, you know, it's good to reiterate, I guess. But anyway, him as a villain and how he's teetering the lines between duty to his family and the obligation he feels to provide for the family in the way they do business versus the legitimate business he has is very interesting. It's also interesting how he pretty much welcomes Yan into the fold as, you know, the family, and like Yan doesn't let other underlings know that he's a member of the family. He doesn't want people to know that, but Wing Hao pretty much bluntly tells him, you're my brother. It's a fact. You are family, and I am going to treat you as such, and you will be recognized as such by me and by the rest of the family. So, you know, I kind of wondered initially when they said that, you know, his father was Quinn and he was the half-brother of Wing Hao, like if there would be like some sort of animosity, or like if he would be treated like a redheaded stepchild, essentially, like the bastard son he is. But no, he was welcomed with open arms, and it was, you know, it did fall again into that very almost, I guess, maybe more Donnie Brasco, like if I had to draw a comparison to another mob film or crime movie, with how he's interacting with the family and how he's there. But like, you know, he seems very withdrawn, Yan does, even though he's doing it. And like, he's still trying to, I guess, you know, it's showing that he's trying to adapt to his role as, you know, I am a cop, but I am also a part of this group and I need to act like it as such. Cause, you know, he doesn't really talk much to his brother, and his brother makes a joke about it. He's like, you don't like talking to me too much, do you? You know, he kind of kids around about it, but he welcomes him. And, you know, later on, after he gets acclimated into, you know, ingratiating himself with the family, he shows a little bit of a mean streak. And there is a moment with his girlfriend at the time. His girlfriend at that point has an abortion because she sees the wild lifestyle that he lives, and she doesn't want her baby brought up in that. And I don't think they said it, but I feel like it's implied that's the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend he encounters in the first film, which is really, that's a really cool little, you know, nod. And, ooh, you know, is that why, is this the same person? And like, does she have regrets over her decision in that regard? You know, it's a fun little tidbit. It's one scene, but that was one that I really enjoy. We also had, like, I think, you know, most of the, we get a recurring character in Crazy Quinn, who was in the first film as Yan's buddy in that one. He's playing his younger version of himself. We get a little bit of a sad backstory for him in this. That was kind of cool to see. What else is that? Yeah, again, I don't want to give too much away because I want you to watch this film yourself and enjoy it and just get a little bit of a taste. This is a sampler for you to go check it out. But the cinematography is top notch in this. You know, it's a different approach from like the first film. It's more straightforward crime. I mean, the other one was crime, but like the crime thriller. But you know, this has got a little bit more grit to it, but still carries an emotional weight, especially for Wong and Sam and their relationship. Again, it's one of the stronger points of the film, and you know, it makes me sympathetic to Sam's character in this film. You know, we didn't get that in that first one. He's very withdrawn in that, you know, in that first one, not withdrawn. He's very more elusive and combative with everybody, and just, you know, whatever's got to be done to get my goals, I'm going to do it. But this one, we see like him become broken and like the sadness that he carries. And it's like, man, you kind of want to feel bad for this guy being triad aside, and just, you know, the relationship he has with Wong in that regard. And, you know, while we don't get a whole lot of Ming in this film, he's conflicted and torn in Infernal Affairs. But this one, man, I don't know. This one, I just feel like he's even more of a jerk, especially with what he does in the second act. You know, it sheds light a little bit for me. It's like, wow, the cruel irony of what's to come for Sam at the hands of this kid. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even know. And that's partly Mary's to blame, because Mary doesn't want him to know that her actions, you know, pretty much were the catalyst of everything that happened to them in this film. But that's not even the big half of what, you know, the cruel irony is in all of that. Man, it just was like, oh, you scumbag. I can't even side with you on this one. Like, bro, you're just foul. You're foul, foul, foul. I mean, that's expected, right? He's a triad member, being a mole in the police force. But, you know, this does, but again, like, for Wong, and Wong, you know, as the change Sam goes through, so does Wong, you know, with what he has to deal with and what he loses in this film to get him to the point where he is in Infernal Affairs. You know, his brother dynamic with Superintendent Luke is pretty fun. Like, I like the card game. I like their relationship, and when that comes to a crossroads, man, that was another gut punch that I was just like, I wasn't ready for. That was on the same line as, you know, with Mary's storyline. And just, yeah, like, I was so impressed with this film, because I was coming into this thinking, oh man, it's not going to be as good. And this was never this whole thing was never intended as a trilogy. But, you know, kudos to Felix Chung and Alan Mack for coming together and deciding, let's not do a straight ahead sequel. Let's go back and let's show why these guys are the way they are in this film. Let's show us 7 years and see how they change, develop, grow, or, you know, devolve in their circumstances, and how, you know, they come to be where they are. And it's such a great film, man. Like I said, it's probably one of my I think this is a strong claim to make. It's probably one of my favorite sequels, next to, you know, Terminator Judgment Day. And there was another film. God, it's one of my favorite films. I don't know why I'm blanking. Aliens, Jesus Christ. I was blanking on that for whatever reason. It's late when I'm recording this, so like, yeah, no. My brain's not firing on all cylinders as it should. So, with that, I'll give it, you know, I'm going to give it a rating. I'll give it a 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 rating. Usually we do the Bettany scale, but I'll give it a I'll give it a solid rating out of 4 out of 5. It's definitely a must watch. The first two movies, definitely. I'm curious to see how well number 3 is, and how, you know, because it's supposed to be, a little bit I know of it, it's going to be the events after the first film and the fallout from all that. So I'm curious to see how that plays out and how it may tie in with this film, with this prequel, sequel, you know, situation we had going on with this film. A lot of good stuff. I gave it tidbits here and there, but I want you to go enjoy it for yourself. It is a fun watch. It's very gripping. It still carries an emotional weight like the first movie, even more so. Like I said, you know, you identify with certain characters. You see what, you know, what causes them to be in the place they're at in that first film. So good. Very, it enhances the story and the overall trilogy. So, yeah, go check that out. Go get it. It's on HBO Max right now. Go, if you got it that, or go run it on Prime. Do whatever you got to do to watch this movie. But in that case, we're going to wrap up the show. You can find the Vegas World Pod at Vegas World Pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter. Go follow the YouTube channel, Vegas World, where I do YouTube exclusive videos there. Got a few coming out pretty soon. Be on the lookout for them. If you want to follow my professional wrestling journey, go to the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com and get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. Support the show. Support the brand. Get yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock. The other says Rainbow Dash. Good night and party on.